Yeah. Thank you so much. It's so great to be back at Hemingway's. Hi, Kayla. Okay, warning, girl. If you start laughing, I'm going to start laughing, so. All right. I know, right? Too late. Done. Okay. Thank you so much to Joan and Jimmy. This is like a full circle homecoming sort of feeling. Hemingway's and also Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange, which I really associate with Hemingway's, really supported me when I moved back from Ohio to Pittsburgh, and I can't tell you enough how fantastic. So I owe you a little part of this. Thank you. So anyway, Sweets for the Modern Dancer, this is a story about the territory between sight and blindness, but it's also about how women find community in the face of chronic illness. In this case, mental illness. It has an ensemble cast, there's five characters, and so I will be reading from the perspective of the unnamed narrator, the I, and also her friend, Emma. They're sort of, they get to be BFFs through the course of the book, so. Oh, and parts of this book take place in a psych hospital called Rose Valley, which you'll hear more about later. Here we go. Okay, these first two poems are poems about the narrator and Emma when they were children, like about five or so years old. This is from the narrator's point of view. It's called A Feast for Young Corvids, or sorry, Residual Vision, A Feast for Young Corvids. It has an epigraph. Visually impaired children need to be placed in situations requiring them to solve problems. Institute for Innovative Blind Navigation. Each bead shines like an eye. Their glass sides click together in the valley of his palm. He plucks and wings them. As each one leaves his hand, it disappears. I hear them ricochet off bile-yellow burlap walls, handprint turkeys, finger paintings, loose leaf haiku, and stilted crayon. Mr. Charlie says, "Now pick them up." I suck my thumb, ask how many he just tossed. He won't say. Then the grind and creak of a classroom door released, a scrawl of bodies, iridescent, barely staying within the lines, noisy, curious. I know, because my own body is like this, but not. They can cast their eyes in one direction. Two beads strung on a strand. They watch me operate. My own eyes shiver in their sockets. Legs twist to protect my fragile balance. All the heads turn at once toward me. Sharp beaks. Lithe bird-beast bodies dive to trap the shining things swallowed by the corners of the kindergarten wing. Mm, thank you. Okay, and this is a poem about the narrator's best friend before she knows her. Her name is Emma, and she's about five or seven in this poem. 100 costumes. Emma plays that mirror game in her mother's bedroom. First, her jawline slides into view, then the eye, long-lashed, melting butterscotch. Who blinked first? Styrene wings affixed to her back. On her sleeve, a ribbon of glitter gold rickrack. She wears 100 costumes the rest of her kin have shed. An ambulance siren scalds the night. Emma turns her head toward reflected light. Her mind's run riot again, because when she looks back, the other girl has fled. The mirror frames its usual scene. One little girl, cracked lips, grass-stained blue jeans. So as you may be able to tell, both of these girls sort of exist in their private internal worlds, and they have to break out of them when they get to know each other. So the next two poems are about the narrator and Emma when they are, I would say, about 19, early 20s. This is the narrator's poem. It's called 4R Pomegranate. At 19, I chased my devils, red in the webs of my fingers with anything hella hot, double, under the nails, pink white, dares involving aftershock, stains in the sink, shot after shot, tonguing the last, smeared across my wrists, bit of gold from the bottom like an angry child's finger paint of the glass, midnight alone in the crooks of my elbows, in the English buildings, Stygian, like the underside of a Louboutin lav, I lean against ochre, pump, cinder blocks, and I lay myself red like the nurse's needle stick, open for boys I don't love, vials rattling in the tray, then cram two bloody fingers when she carts them away, down my throat to stretch a river, like a watercolor Rorschach. My hair is spiked and dyed, latent fears grown faces, like sunset, my sign is fire. And this is Emma at about the same age. And Rose Valley, the psych ward, makes an appearance, its first appearance here. Exit plan. Supine on the gurney, Emma tracks a spirit. She floats across Emma's body, then to the ceiling. The spirit wears a torn sky-colored dress. Emma squints, or else she is torn. Her translucence scrims the harsh light like a TV near-death experience. Emma had wild-fired scotch, then some blue pills, some yellow ones, leaned out her apartment howling until the neighbor children gathered. The siren like a faraway carnival. Someone push-pulled her, blood on her face. The EMT asked, "What's your name?" Emma said, "Emma," but it sounded like, "I'm mud." Emma chokes, branch in her throat. NG tube drags poison out. Deep in her stomach, the suck and pull. Emma thinks, "So this is patience." Emma asks the night nurse, "Am I going to die?" He thinks she is gagging, blots her cheek, "Don't touch." His golf shirt, chest so close she can see the red threads intersect. In her sleep, Emma hears two-way radio static, attempted suicide for transport to Rose Valley, recommend 24-hour observation. Ethereal lurch in her gut, the bed begins to move. Thank you. So Rose Valley, the psych ward where these women all cross paths, this is sort of the origin poem for that. So where I grew up in eastern PA, I grew up in the Lehigh Valley, so it was really rural, and you could see mountains, like these blue mountains on all sides surrounding you, on almost every side, and this gave me the idea for Rose Valley because you could always see... the title of this poem is Alpenglow, and the phrase means like the sun rising or setting, how it looks over the mountains. So you could always see the sun rising or setting over these mountains, and it was a little bit claustrophobic. So it gave me the idea for where I wanted to set this hospital. Alpenglow. Women in west-facing rooms can see it as a threat or a promise. From the thick paned windows they can't open, even with the force of their whole bodies. Rose Valley is specially designed for safety. Hope is the hem of a red dress wide enough to span the horizon. Three women holding hands on a locked ward equals one coven. Their love is a red, red hope. Their fevers, their cigarette burns, fluorescence, and water-stained ceiling tiles, women hide behind curtains of unwashed hair. A red hope is like a blind hem out of sight. I sleep like Philomela, no tongue to tell the story. Dream of supermarket globes, women flesh stacked into pyramids, gently misted with frost. My first words in group therapy are, please renounce me on the ice lakes. Rose Valley is designed to gently hem in women who are tattered and awry. Do we founder in dimness? Do we rage over ragged ova or rape or red blanket wrapped around a dead baby boy? Rose Valley is specially designed so we can rage all we want. Emma's boots have anarchy symbols, dried vomit on one toe. They took her laces. She wears them instead of slippers because, she says, it's ironic. The horizon is designed to gently confine. Sometimes we get to chatting over frozen juice cups. Plastic spoon goes scrape, scrape, scrape to dig up sweet red. Scrape, scrape until a new girl breaks one, says, shh, shoves it up her sleeve. Soon, no more spoons. Hope is a razor sewn into the hem of a red dress. Thanks, I like that one too. So this is more about the narrator and Emma in the hospital. Red room. Emma is my roommate. She talks in her sleep. Over the white pillow, a torrent of red curls. Emma's hair is red like strawberries and stop signs, red like Valentine's, red like mine. Emma calls it red rum red, like a blood-curdling lipstick scream. We get along. She says, make your bed. They see it as improvement, fester privileges like walks and communal eating. I don't tell her I don't want communal eating, want to eat only with her, go outside only with Emma. Her pillowcase has an oval of pink where she tossed and sweat in nightmares. She flips it white side up, pulls the top sheet all the way over like covering a corpse. Two dead girls leave their bodies behind in search of breakfast. A line has already formed. Okay, I'm skipping all the way to the end of the book because I don't want to go over time. And so this last poem in the book features Emma and the narrator together. It sort of ties together the threads of their friendship, and it also ties together the narrative of blindness that you didn't get to hear much about tonight. So the poem is called Saltation with Cain. Saltation means a jumping or leaping dance, and the kind of cane we're talking about is a white cane, the kind blind people use. Saltation with Cain. When I hold Emma's daughter, she points to the ways I am different from Emma. Fingers my pink hair, nose ring, while Emma murmurs gentle. I let her hands traverse my face, probe my mouth, attest to silent cities within. I say, ma, ma, ma. She points to chipped black toenail polish, skims the lines of my tattoos. Mama, no hair. Stealth Hosanna to the witches. We walk along Carson to the car. She leans out to trail a brick wall's texture, tracing lines of mortar. Emma says, brick, She says, brick. Thinnest channels, coastline, shoals. Now she wants down. She has her eye on my cane, tries to wrest it from me with both hands. Instinct, enchant, elation. I say, white cane. She says, white cane. Rubs her palm up the side like me when I first felt its smoothness, fiberglass telescoping. Alone, canal to ocean, locate the lowest halo. She wants to walk, to spin, so we do, awkwardly, and then twirl around it like a maypole. Nascent action, anoint, atone. I hold up high and she holds low. She is joyous. I am circumscribed. Wince, silent, tithe. I try to keep the tip solid on the sidewalk so she won't slip. Lento, 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 lento. Her feet follow their own rhythm. I try my best to be the wheel of the gyroscope. Leash, lean, twist. I chant, spin, spin. I don't care who sees. Thank you.